T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. For over 45 years, Prudence Crandall Center has been a leader in our state's efforts to reduce the devastating impact of domestic violence in the lives of victims, their children, and our community. It is one of only a few programs in the country offering the full spectrum of shelter, housing, and supportive services. Today, we are blessed to have with us Carolyn Jasper, the Director of Development for the Prudence Crandall Center of New Britain. Welcome.
Thank you, Shelley. I'm so grateful to be here.
We are glad that you're going to be here. Why don't you start out by telling us about the candlelight vigil that's going to be happening on October 2nd?
That is one of the most meaningful moments for us in our entire year, every year. It's something that not only happens at our Rose Hill facility at 594 Burritt Street in New Britain and is open to the public, but happens throughout the country at Domestic Violence Awareness Month events, because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So it's a time when we invite the community to come in and to gather with us, and we read the names of all of those who in the state of Connecticut have lost their lives in the past year due to intimate partner violence. And we also remember a few others from our community from past years who remain close to us. And during that program, we have a survivor who shares her story, and we also have an open mic portion where family members or friends who've had a loss or any other survivor who wishes to share part of their journey can share and feel that community support and feel our commitment to making a change in the year ahead.
And so in the state of Connecticut, according to some readings, it was 16 or 17 people that died from domestic violence?
There are different ways of looking at that list, because some include family violence victims, which is a broader definition than intimate partner violence. I know that our list has 24 names, which includes 3 that we're remembering over time, and then 21 from the intimate partner violence list, and including some who lost their lives this year. But we want to make sure, given that that is such a fresh pain, that we acknowledge that and we honor them.
So give us some background on the Prudence Crandall Center. Tell us about the organization.
It has a really proud history. It's an organization that I've only been affiliated with for 7 years, but the state of Connecticut should be so proud of their role in the movement to address all of the impacts of domestic violence. It began in 1973. It was a group of women in the basement of a church at a time when there weren't services available for women. It was often difficult to turn to the police, even your clergy, anyone in the community for help. And they decided that was unacceptable and they were going to make a change. They formed Prudence Crandall Center at that time. They were inspired by Prudence Crandall, our state heroine, how she spoke up for the voiceless and put her own safety on the line and her future on the line to help others. So that was their inspiration. And from that point in time, Prudence Crandall Center opened at one point the first shelter for battered women in the state of Connecticut in 1975 and has continued to develop its services over those more than four decades of services of years.
And so it's amazing, you know, when you reach a certain stage in life, then you can remember what life was like at another time. So going back to 1975 in Connecticut, it's true that we really were in a very different place in the United States when it came to issues of domestic violence. And I remember there was a famous story that came about probably near that time period that happened up in the Torrington area. Was her name?
Tracy Thorne.
Yes. And what was that story?
Well, that was a very tragic case of someone who reached out for help over and over again and suffered terribly because the system didn't respond. Individuals didn't respond. So the laws were changed in Connecticut at that time based on her example. And I had the honor of hearing her speak last year at the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence annual breakfast, and was incredibly moved by her journey in her whole life and the example she has set for others and changed the lives of so many. You know, at the time we thought of battered women, and it was part of, as you said, the women's movement to open people's eyes to this issue and to say it's not acceptable and we're not going to consider this a family matter or a personal matter or someone's, you know, behind closed door issue. It's a societal matter. And over time, we've increased our understanding to know it's not just women, it can also be men. And it doesn't happen in just certain neighborhoods or certain relationships. It is an equal opportunity offender. It happens in every neighborhood, every socioeconomic class, every ethnicity, every racial and religious background. So it's something even the CDC identifies as a serious public health threat here in America. So it's something we all need to acknowledge, talk about, and be part of the solution.
And so we go back in time once again to 1975, where it starts to come forward. People are thinking about it. These are during the days of the women's movement, where women are starting to get voice about certain kinds of things. And this idea of domestic violence comes on the community and the national stage. So let me ask you this question. What is domestic violence today? What does it mean today? What is it?
What people need to understand is what it's not. It's not an anger problem. It's not something related to alcohol or substance abuse. It's at its core about power and control. Power and control manifesting itself in emotional control, financial control, physical abuse. There are many aspects of it in many faces, and it's not always obvious. We find too often people still think of the stereotype that if this was happening to someone I know and love, I would know. You know, it would be the bruise on the face or the scarf around the neck. The signs that we can all know and be aware of are much more subtle. And so we all need to be aware of that.
And so I know that some of the work that happens with Prudence Crandall is to help with younger people in understanding intimate partner violence, so that way the cycle does not continue. How do you begin to educate younger people on this kind of violence?
It starts with basic relationship work. Right? So we have a research-based curriculum that's appropriate from kindergarten through senior year of high school. And we also work with students in college settings. And our prevention coordinator uses that curriculum. It has interactive activities. It has ways to engage kids at any age. But at its core, it's about helping them understand the difference between healthy relationships and unhealthy relationships. Boundaries, respect, issues related to social media interactions and communications. There are many things impacting this generation that my generation never faced. And as caring as parents and teachers and anyone who has a young person in their life are, the young people are always like three steps ahead of you on you know, how they're communicating with each other. And that's really important to get at them where they live right now.
And you said something so powerful, which is this idea of boundaries and relationships. Mm-hmm. Speak to that. How do women learn and how do they express boundaries in a relationship so they can maintain a healthy relationship?
Well, again, you know, it can be men and women because the abuser is just the one who's exercising the power and control, and it happens in all types of intimate relationships. But these can be boundaries in how you dress. You should have control over that. Someone shouldn't be telling you how you dress. Who your friends are, who you socialize with, if you're being criticized for that. Abusers will often isolate intentionally over time victims from their families and friends and support networks in order to have that control. And they may encase that in love messaging. So it's boundaries around you being free to have relationships with other people, with your family, with your friends, to go other places, how you dress. All those things that have to do with your personal identity, a respecting, loving relationship would celebrate, not try to control.
We're talking with Carolyn Jasper, who is the Director of Development from the Prudence Crandall Center, and we'll be back after the break.
Bless the Lord, oh my soul. Oh, my soul. Worship His holy name. Sing like never before. Oh, my soul. I worship Your holy name. It's a new day dawning. It's time to sing Your song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes. Worship Your holy name, Jesus.
back, we're talking with Carolyn Jasper, the Director of Development for the Prudence Crandall Center in New Britain, Connecticut. So give us some background about where you grew up and how you were formed for this kind of community leadership, being in this role.
Oh, thank you. You know, I'm not sure that I could say I did grow up in a family of five sisters with a lot of strong female role models, and always saw a lot of loving, respecting relationships. So I know I'm blessed in that. I came to this work not intentionally at the time, but it doesn't take long to really have your eyes opened when you learn more about the issue and you see how prevalent it is and you see it impacting young people just starting out in life and seniors who at some point should be, you know, in this resting place in there. It affects all generations because abusers don't come forward immediately with obvious signs that this is what it's going to turn into. We've often had it described to us as a slow boil. So it can be someone who's charismatic and charming and showers you with love and affection, and the problematic behaviors come over time. But where my passion comes from, in part, is because at our Rose Hill facility is our supportive housing program. That's where it's home to. So I get to see the families on a daily basis and the kids and the men and women we serve. And I'm really privileged that in my role, I work with many on those who are empowered by sharing their story. And they want to help others. That's part of their healing journey. And I'm always really humbled by, you know, the pain that the human spirit can endure and the strength when it moves forward from that pain, and that they're willing to share to help others.
And we know that each of us can choose the kind of work that we're in a lot of times, and you wouldn't have to stay in this work. You could do PR on something, you know, pleasant and non-personal. So where is your commitment? How do you stay committed to this kind of work that you're doing? Because it does touch deeply.
I feel privileged to be associated with the history of what those women who founded Prudence Crandall Center began and what it is today. Today, we have 40 full and part-time employees. We have four victim advocates every single day in New Britain's regional courts, getting every single police report, and the caseload is a couple thousand a year. It's huge. And reaching out to those victims in that moment to try to let them know that help is available and there's someone there to walk alongside them and bring them to safety. I know the work that our shelter staff does, which is heart-wrenching at time, but so meaningful to be available 24 hours a day. We have the largest emergency shelter for victims of domestic violence in the state of Connecticut. And that staff is there 24 hours a day to take those calls, to welcome those individuals or families in who need help in that moment to be safe and to find comfort and know that it's not them and that help's available. And then I see our families who are in our housing program, which is really unique and really important, and also an enormous investment. It was an $8.5 million investment by our board of directors leading that charge about 10 years ago to bring the program to fruition. And it's unique in that because it's a huge investment of dollars. But that's really what families need. A shelter is a short-term solution. And if you are, say, the mom, and you're suffering from this at home, and you've been cut off from your support network, and you don't have financial means of your own, the idea of going to a shelter is, well, I've got to figure out what's next after that. And I don't have first and last month's rent. I don't have family to take me in. What am I going to do? You know, the lesser of evils is staying where I am. But the housing program provides them with a what's next. It's really a gift of time to get back on their feet and never feel like they have to choose between say, homelessness or abuse.
And that's powerful. And when we think about this, the diverse range of services that are provided, it's that it gives a way for people at every level of involvement with domestic violence to get a little bit of help. Talk about the hotline and how a person that might be wondering, let's say this woman's wondering, is this abuse? And if she calls the hotline, what might happen for her?
You'll speak 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with a certified domestic violence counselor. And no matter where you live in the state of Connecticut, that counselor will be able to answer your questions. It'll be anonymous. No one will have to know that you called. So you can call with a question about you or a question about someone else in your life and be given direction on what are some good next steps to go to receive help or what to think through if this is happening in your life and you're not sure if you're ready to take that next step. They will always respect you from your position where you're at and what your needs are because everyone's different. But it's really important to know also that if you live anywhere in the state of Connecticut that the 888-774-2900 number will connect you with someone who will then connect you with local services. And as you mentioned, we have our residential programs, our shelter and our housing, the court advocates, but we also have community counseling. So you don't have to be living at in a DV shelter or in our housing to get help, to have face-to-face comfort, support, and guidance from a counselor. Free of charge. You can get that help from Prudence Crandall Center or Interval House or many of the other agencies in the state.
And for a person that's in a relationship and they're wondering, is it love or is this starting to be a problem? Is it venturing towards abuse? And abuse comes in a variety of forms. It can be emotional abuse. It can be financial abuse. It can be physical abuse. It comes in a variety of forms. How does a person know if they're being abused? How do they start to notice?
That's why speaking with a counselor is number one what we urge people to do. It's not a commitment. You're not saying that you're going to leave the relationship by making that call, but have that call because there are certain behaviors in particular that can really put someone at risk. And if you describe what's going on, what you're concerned, if you're feeling uncomfortable, there's a reason you're feeling uncomfortable. So, for example, if every time you try to make plans with friends, you get a lot of questions about that and you feel a subtle pressure not to or to cancel those plans, that can be emotional abuse. That can be that controlling behavior. We mentioned before, if you're being told how to dress, how to spend your finances, how handing over your control to things like that, where you go, who you see, what you do. Any put-downs, even abusers will threaten harm to themselves, threaten harm to others in your family. These are all things that you can talk to a counselor about and really get a sense for where you're at and your sense of risk.
And what's wonderful about the services is if a person is starting to wonder if they're going through abuse or starting to try to come up with next steps, even the counselors will help you develop safety plans, for example. What is a safety plan?
A safety plan is something very individualistic, related to your life, where you are, how your abuser interacts with you, and those touch points where your safety may be really at risk. So it can be everything about your presence on the internet and your social media to where you go to work or who your friends and relatives are and places where in your life you've had those problems before. They can help you think about all of those things. They can help you think about putting together a safety plan, an escape plan, but in a way that's specific to your situation and keeps you safe.
We're talking with Carolyn Jasper, who is the Director of Development for the Prudence Crandall Center. And on October 2nd, there will be a candlelight vigil at the Prudence Crandall Center in New Britain at 6:30 p.m. We're going to take a break and we'll be back.
Thank you.
listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
Shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Stars fading, but I linger on, dear.
Oh, how you linger on.
Still craving your kiss.
How you crave my kiss.
Now I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just sing this.
Give me a little kiss, sweet dreams. Sunbeams find you, sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Buzz, 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 fading, but I linger on, dear. Still craving your kiss.
Don't did it, don't did do baby, baby.
Yeah, I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this.
Sweet dreams,
dreaming.
Till something's fine, you keep dreaming.
Gotta keep dreaming.
Whatever they be, you've got to make me a promise.
Oh, yeah.
Promise to me
you'll dream.
Dream a little dream of me.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. Feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world. Oh, baby, yeah. sunshine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new
Yeah! eastern fountain.
We're talking with Carolyn Jasper, who is the Director of Development for the Prudence Crandall Center, located in New Britain, Connecticut. And on October 2nd, there will be a candlelight vigil at their space in New Britain, rain or shine, at 6:30 p.m. So when we think about the wonderful work of the Prudence Crandall Center, who are some of the volunteers that are involved, and what is it that they do?
Well, we have a really wonderful board of directors and Bright Futures team. And the Bright Futures team in particular helps us with all of our awareness raising. That's the candlelight vigil and something we call our hope tours, which the entire community is invited to come in for. A hope tour is a one-hour tour that we will do for a group anytime Monday through Friday, or we have some public tours that people can sign up each month. And it's a journey through the stories of three individuals who have been impacted, who we have served by domestic violence. So it's really meant to open eyes and hearts to the issue, to let people see how it really impacts people. But at the same time, you get to see one of our apartments in our supportive housing program and our children's room and our teen room and our support group room and our health services room and our campus. So you get a sense of the community that we provide at Rose Hill as well. And no one's ever asked for anything when they come on a tour. We figure if you come in and you learn more about the issue and you walk away, that's how all of us are going to make a difference going forward in those numbers. You know, it's 1 in 4 women, 1 in 7 men, and 1 in 3 dating teens who are impacted by domestic violence or intimate partner violence. So we need everyone's help.
So it's an opportunity for people from all walks of life to be involved with the Prudence Crandall Center. And so when we look at ways that people can be involved in this very important area of advocacy, how do they become a counselor? What is the process?
Well, our counselors are typically people who've gone to college for social work and or those who work in our court system may have gone for criminal justice. And then there is a certification class that they take through the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence, or sometimes we offer it at Prudence Crandall Center, where it's about 20 hours of additional training on issues specific to people who work with IPV victims and in this arena. And to do anything at our facility directly with clients, it typically requires, whether you're a staff person or a volunteer, that certification as a domestic violence counselor.
And so that's a wonderful opportunity for somebody that's committed to really caring for families and helping directly in the healing process. Mm-hmm. But you've also mentioned the Hope Tours, which is a chance to see what's going on in your wonderful facility and even see opportunities for how they can help. So if someone's to go on a Hope Tour today, what are some of the areas of need in the Prudence Crandall Center where someone can make a contribution and make a difference even right now?
Of course, we're a private nonprofit, so like all, we depend on the community to provide our services. About 70% of our funding comes from federal and state and some local government sources, and the other 30%, every year, we start from scratch to raise from the community. So the community is truly partners in our work. So financial contributions, whether it's from a Domestic Violence Awareness Day during the month of October, where you dress down or you wear purple, or the faith-based community are wonderful supporters of our work, or contributions from individuals. That's how we keep all those services going all year. And apart from financial contributions, there are many ways that the community can help us in more tangible ways with our family. And you can always call our offices at 225-5187 extension 219 to speak to our resource coordinator, who knows what it is our families need at the moment. So in the beginning of the school year, it's uniforms for New Britain schools, and it may be gift cards so the family members can get the kids new shoes that they get to choose themselves. Or at certain times of year, maybe donations for our kids to go to summer camp and their supplies they need to summer camp. Things that help low-income families, because if they're living with us, they qualify as low-income, and often they come from nothing. They pay a third of whatever they have when they first come to us. Helping those families make ends meet, fill the gaps. So it's often very practical things like new home furnishings, everything that you would think of. If you left your house and left everything behind and went to a shelter and then was starting a new life, what would you need? You know, everything to fill your cabinet.
And so it's a wonderful opportunity for a church group, a faith community group, a community group to gather together to make a financial contribution or to contribute to some of the special needs that come up. We know that the holidays will be coming around once again. It's another opportunity to make a meaningful contribution to the Prudence Crandall Center. If someone wants to make a contribution, how might they give? What are the vehicles for giving?
You can go directly to our website, www.prudencecrandall.org, and contribute financially that way. Of course, our address is listed there. Again, it's 594 Burritt Street, New Britain, Connecticut, 06053. Contributions can be mailed to Prudence Crandall Center directly. And if you're interested in doing some kind of donation drive, which makes you feel connected to our families, as I mentioned, you call our number and extension 219, and Emmeline will be happy to let you know what all the time needs we have. For example, new twin size bedding for our shelter, which we go through all the time, and we always want it new and fresh. So that's twin sheets and comforters and pillows, to those things that are like most in need for our families seasonally at that time.
And so it's always an opportunity to contribute to the great work of the Prudence Crandall Center. And once again, on October 2nd, there will be a candlelight vigil at the Prudence Crandall Center at 594 Burritt Street in New Britain, rain or shine, at 6:30 p.m. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for your service with the Prudence Crandall Center.
Thank you so much for having us here today. We're really grateful.
30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.